You are listening to the IFH Podcast Network. For more amazing filmmaking and screenwriting podcasts, just go to ifhpodcastnetwork.com.
Welcome to Filmmaking Conversations with Damian Swabey. Listen to conversations with award-winning filmmakers, directors from the golden age of television, and creatives from the indie film community who continue to inspire the next generation of filmmakers. And now, over to your host, Damian Swabey.
Hi, Suzanne. How are you today?
Hi, Damian. I'm great. How are you?
I'm feeling great. I almost feel like it's Christmas Eve Eve.
I love it. Yeah. Christmas in the summer.
Yeah. Why not? Why not? Never had that before. Never been to Australia and experienced something like that, but I wouldn't mind. So thank you again for coming on. I said off camera, off air, if I can say that. Thank you for coming on. And because I really appreciate it, all the great work you've done, and I can see the effort you put into your work. And I really love it when an actress takes the bull by the horns.
Well, thank you. Thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate it.
No, sure. You are maybe a workaholic. I'm not sure, but I think we'll find out. So originally, where are you from?
I'm originally from Louisville, Kentucky, which is, you know, a pretty small city, but probably the biggest city in Kentucky.
Okay.
Yeah.
And what was it like growing up in Kentucky? Is there a creative hub there that you were involved in at any period?
You know, there was. I was pretty lucky in terms of the arts institutions that I had nearby. Kentucky has a lot of great regional theaters, and in my school had plays and music programs, which I did all of the plays in high school and middle school that I could. And there were even, you know, programs like during the summer. There's this great program called the Governor's School of the Arts. Probably a lot of states have them, where you can go for several weeks in the summer and study your particular, focus, which I always chose theater when I was in high school. And so, I had, all kinds of programs. And I actually had another theater that was close to where my grandmother is from, called Mumfordville, Kentucky, which is a town that you've probably not heard of. But right nearby Mumfordville is a town called Horse Cave, Kentucky. And they had an amazing repertory theater originally called the Horse Cave Theater. And then they named it the Kentucky Repertory Theater. Sadly, it is no longer a theater anymore. But in its heyday, when it was started, it was a really happening theater where people of all kinds would come and gather and watch plays and make plays. And that's kind of where I credit that institution as really solidifying my need and desire to be a part of the theater community. And I loved my experiences there. And that really made me go, okay, I'm going to go study this in college and make this my thing, my career. Even though I had no idea what that would mean.
So what experiences exactly did you love?
In Kentucky. Yeah. Well, particularly, I was probably around a junior in high school, and I went and auditioned for a play at Kentucky Repertory Theater, and it was my first time auditioning for them. And it was The Crucible, which I'm not sure if you're familiar with that play, but it's by Arthur Miller. And there's this hilarious SNL sketch about The Crucible. I feel like a lot of high schools do this play, everyone should check out this SNL sketch, because it's really funny. It's a very serious play, and it's about Puritans and, you know, and the witch hunt of Salem back in the 1600s. And I got this role, which was one of the bigger roles in the play, where she's, the name is Elizabeth Proctor, and I got to do that with this group of kids, and we were all high school students, but we were being directed by the artistic director of the theater, who was this really amazing person who led us through this production. And yeah, it was really that production that I just felt like, oh wow, I've got to do this. It was just so in it with everybody, and I felt like a real actor for the first time, just like, I think I can do this, you know. Right. It's just so wonderful to be part of the community of theater artists that I was with, and I was like, I got to do this all the time. This is amazing.
It certainly is. And you decided sometime after, I guess, or maybe not shortly after, to move to Brooklyn to continue with your career.
Why? Yeah. Brooklyn? Well, so I made the move to New York after college, and I really was lucky because a lot of kids, students from my college, Davidson College, had already moved to New York. And so they had already done the scary thing of moving to the city. And I thought, well, I do know people there now, and so why not just move there and see what happens? And one of my very dear friends, Steve Kaliski, who went to college with me, was already in New York, and he was going to do a play and invited me to be a part of the play in New York. And I thought, well, I guess I better go move there and do this play. And that's, you know, what prompted me to move. And then I just have stayed there for several years now since, and made my home, and really can't imagine any other place that I would stay at this point. I just love New York so much, and lived in Manhattan for a while, which was crazy. I don't know if you've gotten to the chance to visit New York, but Manhattan particularly is a very loud and busy place. But if you go out to the outer boroughs like Queens and Brooklyn, I've moved to Queens first and then Brooklyn. And I was like, okay, I can stay here a little bit longer because it was just it's a little more quiet. It's more of a neighborhoody feel, particularly where I'm in Brooklyn now. The neighborhood is called Greenpoint, and it's just a really great community of people. I live on like a very quiet, small park, and it's much more neighborhoody than you would think of as being New York.
It sounds like the perfect place to prepare for auditions when you're at home.
Absolutely. Not so much
hustle and bustle coming through the windows and everything like that.
Although you'd be surprised, there's still like so much that happens outside the window. I feel like whenever I try to film an audition or anything in our apartment, which, you know, is right, there's a street right outside. It's like, there's the ice cream guy is sitting outside now, and it's playing his little song, and like, okay, when is he going to stop? So
I can imagine for sure. Certainly can. And you've mentioned being on the stage and your love for theater, but I've seen you on camera, on screen. Tell us about the differences you feel like when you're on stage and when you're in front of the camera.
Yeah, they're so different, I feel. The process of making a film versus being in a play, it's so entirely different. I mean, I feel like the acting part of it feels kind of the same, you know. It's the same preparation that you do to find, you know, how you're going to play this character or how you're going to find out like about this person that you're portraying. I feel like that preparation is a lot of the same stuff, but yeah, it's so different. Film is so fragmented in a way. You know, you do these one little parts, and often you'll do them out of order. And so you have to be really prepared, I think. Well, obviously for both, you have to be super prepared. But with film particularly, with having to shoot out of order, you know, you kind of have to know where in what place of the character's journey you are, and make sure that you know where you are in the script, so that you can really build that journey. But I do love theater because it is so community oriented. And you rehearse and you rehearse and you rehearse, and then, you know, it's really just up to you guys, you know, the actors, and to just do it every night after night. And it's just a nice community. And then film, you know, it's like, it's a different kind of community because there is no audience at that moment. It's just your crew, and you're there with your fellow crew members and your actors and making something in the moment, which can also feel very intimate and great. And then it feels so good afterwards showing it to live audiences. And that's what I've been missing, you know, during the pandemic, is being able to go and do, you know, in-person screenings. We did get to do some of that with our most recent film, but it was, you know, I had a lot of virtual festivals as well. And that's tougher. It's just tougher to not be in the room with the audience to hear the reaction to the film.
I completely understand that. In terms of a virtual festival, I went to a couple myself, and it just felt a bit weird.
It's not, after experiencing both with my film Christmas Eve Eve, I would definitely prefer the in-person, just because it's so much better to be in the room with the audience and then to meet people after the screening and talk in person. It's just you can't manufacture that experience online, unfortunately.
No, you can't. I kind of think sometimes with the bigger festivals that you might not be able to go to. Well, in my case, because I'm here, not over there where you in America, it's good because I wouldn't be able to go anyway. But I can see how some people would have a huge problem being in their bedroom, living room, wherever, on their laptop, desktop, feeling like they're at a film festival compared to what being at a film festival is really like.
Yeah, it's very different. I mean, I do think that it's great that a lot of festivals are offering the online components because, yeah, for folks who can't physically be there for whatever reason, it's great for them to be included and be able to watch the films. It's just nice as a filmmaker to be there and be in person with everyone and have those conversations and just hear people react to your film. You know, you can't hear people when they're watching it online, but if you're in the room with them, you can hear, you know, what they're laughing at or what they're not laughing at, or very quiet. You know, it's such a different experience.
Completely. And sometimes people are laughing at things and reacting at things you would even think as a filmmaker, oh, I had no idea that would, you know, provoke such a response.
Absolutely. It's funny. You know, what people will respond to, and that you think, oh, I didn't really think that was a very funny line, but people are really laughing at it. And you're like, yeah, I guess it is kind of funny. I didn't even think about it.
Yeah, completely. And you yourself, what type of on-screen roles have you had?
I think probably my most recognizable role is a role that I did on Silicon Valley, which was this HBO comedy about the tech world. And I played a robot, which was a really interesting and fun experience. I had a lot of like green screen elements and just very intensive makeup in the chair. You know, I think my makeup took about 3 hours to do for each day that I turned into this robot. And then on top of that, I had these green screen elements, which then this amazing VFX company called Barnstorm VFX company, then they went in and did, you know, these other amazing effects. Like I was wearing a bald cap and I had this green screen skull that they then put wires into the back of my head and they got rid of my legs. I was literally just like a half a person. I had fake arms. It was hilarious. And it was really, really fun to do that role. They have a lot of improv on that set as well. you know, these guys who were starring the show, Zach Woods and Thomas Middleditch, they're all extremely good improvisers. And so they do a lot of improv on the show. And so that was fun too, just trying to get in, you know, just being open to whatever they would throw at me and just kind of respond as a robot in improvising. But also the lines that they had already written were super funny. So that was a really, really fun role.
So how long was a shooting day? Because if you're spending 6 hours in makeup.
It was, those were really long days. It took about a month and a half, I think, to film it on various day over, you know, that time period. They were some really long days. And they were funny because I would just be walking around the Sony lot in a bald cap and basically an entirely green screen leg. I was wearing these green screen leggings. And I looked insane. I remember I was trying to find the bathroom or something on one of these giant lots. And there was a tour going by, you know, and everyone's just like looking like, what is this person doing? They look crazy. I'm wearing a robe and then, you know, fuzzy slippers. And like, I have this bald cap on and I looked crazy.
It sounds very conservative. It does.
Yeah, absolutely.
So as a lover of theater and love being an actress in theater, and you've had some interesting times in front of camera, that's for sure, by the sound of things, what made you want to direct, write, and co-produce your own short film, Christmas Eve Eve?
I think there were a lot of reasons that I wanted to do that. Actors get told a lot to create their own work as a way to help them, become better actors and just show people, you know, what they're capable of, I guess. And it's great advice. It is also really hard to follow, just because, as you know, as being a filmmaker, trying out all those other hats, director, writer, producer, those are not easy things to do. And, so it took me a long time to kind of figure out how to put this together. I think I'd always wanted to make, this story. It's a pretty true story. It's based, you know, really directly on my own life. And so the questions that I ask in the film about, you know, how does trauma get passed down from generation to generation in families? How does that affect, you know, you as a person? It's a story that I've always thought about. And it's one that I think this would be an interesting story to share. I don't know how to do that. Which is why then I just talked to all of my friends, you know, that I know in the filmmaking world, and asked for all of their advice. And I talked to a lot of people before I really started making it. And, just to kind of figure out, how do I even begin? Because it was kind of felt like a huge task to me. And now I'm looking at it, I'm like thinking, okay, how can I make this into a feature film? But you know, that's another whole beast to work with. But that's why I like doing the short film first, because it felt like a piece that was, you know, something I could actually maybe accomplish if I made it a smaller short film. Just basically talking to a lot of friends and, you know, people that I reached out to, just kind of pick their brain and say, hey, how do you do this? How do you produce a film? I don't know. And so it took a lot of notes. And then I took, you know, a couple of years really to do it. It took a long time to write it. And I was writing it with my co-writer, who is also my husband, Tom Bean, and he is much more comfortable with writing, and he has written several things. And
oh, great.
This was my kind of first time trying to write. And so it was great because we eventually, just started working on it together. And so I was able to just kind of, we were able to trade drafts, and he, you know, added so much to the script. And I really don't think I would have been able to do the short film if I hadn't had him as my, co-everything. We co-directed it, co-wrote it, we co-produced it together. And doing it together, having that partner to make it, really made it feel like, okay, I can do this because I have this other person who's gonna, you know, anything that I don't feel like I'm not gonna be able to do or something like that, he's gonna have the answer and vice versa. So yeah, I think finding that creative partner was like extremely important in the process.
I'm glad you did, because it worked out so well. I mean, you mentioned you want to make it into a feature film. When I watched it, when it finished, I thought to myself, I could imagine this growing and being almost, well, definitely being like a Netflix series or something.
Oh, wow.
Because when it finished, I was left curious about the characters. You know, that's the type of feeling I had about it. So I'm glad you will make it into a feature film.
I will. I think I will.
No, put it out there. You will.
Yes, I will.
So I noticed that you mentioned family earlier with your grandmother, close to her house. You come from a small town, you said, that you really enjoy. And the film itself, where is it based?
The film is based in the town that I grew up, Louisville. And we filmed it in New York because that's where I live. But we made it seem as Kentucky as possible. But yeah, I set it in my own hometown. And it's a pretty true story. For better or for worse. But fortunately, my mom has been extremely, really my whole family has been extremely supportive of me making it, which I very much appreciate. My dad actually still has no idea that I made the film.
Wow. Okay.
Can you tell us why? Well, I haven't told him.
Oh, there you have it.
I haven't told him yet. I don't know.
Think someone might bring it up?
I mean, you would think, but no one has brought it up to him yet. And including myself. And I just haven't brought it up to him because I wasn't really sure like how he would react to it. I don't know. Maybe I will bring it up to him. I haven't actually decided yet if I'm going to. Okay. He's not a very online person. So it's just, one of those things. My dad's, in his 70s. He's just not online, really. So I can kind of get away with it, I guess.
Sure. That makes sense. That certainly does make sense. And I asked about your grandmother, and it's based in Kentucky, the film. Because a lot of people are told to write about what they know and what they feel. So how did you feel putting pen to paper and getting it all organized and produced along with Tom, your husband, knowing that it's your story, it's personal, you're putting yourself out there in that way?
Yeah, I mean, it was hard. It was really scary. I think it was probably the scariest, one of the scariest things that I've ever done, because you are putting so much of yourself out there and saying, this is a part of my history, and it's my first time putting myself out there as a writer, as a director, as a filmmaker, really. I had only been acting before this. So it was really scary, but I have to say it's been extremely wonderful just sharing it with people. and having these conversations with close friends, but then also people that I don't know very well about the film, saying that they, you know, had experienced something similar maybe, or that they do the same things. You know, when you're talking about suicide and self-harm and substance abuse, a lot of these topics are hard topics to talk about, but so many people experience them in their own personal, individual ways. And I think, you know, growing up, those were very shameful topics to talk about. And I didn't want anyone to know about my family history. And you kind of live with this fear of people finding out. And I think I got to a point in my life and my career where I thought, I don't, you know, care anymore if anyone finds out about my family history. It's part of me, and I want actually to share it and with people. And I kind of felt this, that if I didn't share it, I felt like I wouldn't be able to become the filmmaker or artist that I want to become. I felt like I needed to put it out there and just see what happens, you know, and share the story that I had to tell. And it's been great having people come back at you and say, oh, wow, you know, and just connect with people about these topics and know that, you know, you're not alone in your own experience, that other people experience these things too. And it's actually better if we talk about them instead of bottling them up.
Tom co-wrote this with you, or helped you. You've done this together in a positive way, because it's your story and your experiences. What did Tom bring to the table in terms of crafting the screenplay?
Well, he brought this just breadth of knowledge and depth of knowledge of how screenplays are written and how they should be written, and just organizing, I think, the story and making it clear and distilling it down to what it needed to be. You know, when I was first writing the script, it was way longer, you know, than a short film should be. It was, you know, over 20 pages or something. And he was like, all right, let's take this and really focus on, you know, these details and distill it. And he, you know, he just had more experience in that, you know, overall story, finding that structure of the story, and helping me distill it down to what it really should be for a short. And of course, now that we're talking about a feature, all that other stuff can come back in, and now it's just kind of a big long document that we have right now of like ideas, because a feature can be, you know, well, obviously so much longer. So
Lately.
But yeah, he just helped with it so much, with the story structure, I think, and you know, just making it as sharp as we could, you know.
And casting the film, you're in a situation where you're having to cast parents.
Yeah.
Your parents.
Yeah.
What goes through your head if you're casting people that you may be telling us have some potential faults that are not quite what you want to put out there? As you said earlier, there was a period in time where you didn't put things out like that about your family. So was that very stressful, or how was the situation?
Odd, I guess, to think like, okay, now I'm gonna find these two actors who will play my parents. But I got really lucky because I had a friend who connected me with the woman who plays my mom in the movie, Janet Zarish, who is just an incredible actor. And she's actually an amazing teacher. She teaches at NYU in their grad acting program. And we kind of looked alike too. And I was like, oh, wow, this is perfect. And she just ended up being such an amazing fit. And then with David Dean Petrell, the man who plays my father, He is also from Kentucky, which is just a really cool coincidence. I ended up meeting him through an event through my acting union, SAG-AFTRA. He was teaching a class on auditioning for film and television. And I thought he was so wonderful and engaging. And then it comes to find out in the process of the class that he's from Kentucky, actually. And I was like, oh my gosh, this is too weird. And I was just about to start, you know, really digging in for the short film and fundraising and casting. And so it just worked out that I had met him at that moment. And he just turned out to be this fantastic actor who can do so much. And he just got it. You know, he's from Kentucky. He understood the way people are, and that I don't know, he just got it.
He certainly did. It came across very well on screen. And I must admit, I wanted to ask you about the lady who played your mother, because I know in some independent films people have to use who they can. So like before today, I thought, I actually wondered if you would use your mother, if she was an actress or help train her to play the role or something. You do have a look that is very similar.
I know, it's so funny. I actually did consider casting my mother in the short. I thought, Mom, you could do that. Like, you know, you could do it. And she was maybe open to it, but I think at the end of the day, it was probably best that she didn't do it, because it is so emotional for her. Mm. You know, it's her life too. And and it was just great to have Janet, because she just is such a professional, and it was just lucky that we kind of look alike.
yeah, very, very lucky in that way. Yeah. And sitting down in the editing process, were there any emotional issues for you going through that and making sure you're being true to the film in a certain way that Tom would, whereas not letting down your authenticity in terms of making the right decisions with the editor?
Yeah, it was an interesting editing process, because we filmed it in February of 2020. And so we just got it in there under the wire before everything kind of shut down. And then, you know, March 2020 happened, and suddenly we're all in our homes, and we had our brother-in-law, Casey Brooks, who is an amazing editor, edited the film for us as we were in lockdown. And I remember seeing it for the first time and just being like really just excited, you know, about what we had, you know, made. And and then Tom also edited it with Casey as well. So they would kind of go back and forth. And yeah, there were certain parts that were obviously like hard for me to watch over and over again. And Tom would say the same thing, but he had to, because he was literally editing it. Yeah. Like particularly the scene in the bathroom, which is this kind of self-harming scene. It's like hard to watch that over and over again for myself. And I think for everybody, I don't know, it seems like a disturbing thing for everyone to watch. But you know, we wanted that to be in there. And that definitely took some time to figure out like what the right editing was in that particular scene. How long to let it go on, how much was enough, or was it too much? We went kind of back and forth between making that shorter or longer, and yeah, figuring out the right balance of how dark do you go or not. It was tricky, because of course I also wanted it to be have funny moments too. I mean, I wanted it to live in this like Christmas film genre, which is its kind of own genre at this point. I mean, there's so much Christmas content on, you know, various channels like the Hallmark channel. But you know, one of my favorite movies is It's a Wonderful Life. And I was just like, it's such a good film. And then there's a lot of great movies like that, that are around Christmas time. And so I just really wanted it to live in that genre of, like, you know, being heartfelt, and there's some serious moments, but there's also some levity in, as well. And, for me, watching it in person with other audiences and seeing what they would maybe laugh at, was really fun. Be like, oh, right, there is some comedy. It's just the beginning of the film. And then it kind of gets a little darker.
Yeah, that's the journey of the film. That's fine, I think. There's more than fine. It takes it on a great journey. That's what how I felt when I watched it. So when you've got the film finished and everything's done and it's out there in the world for everyone to see, what are your plans for the film?
Well, I think the main plan for this one was just to share it with folks, you know, just to get it out there. I love that you found it on YouTube, you know, and that's what I loved about, I was so excited to put our film on the Omeletto channel, because they just have so many people who subscribe to their site and to their feed. So I thought, you know, this would be a good chance to get a lot of eyes on it. And, you know, I'm so happy that we were able to be on their channel, because I think people, you know, it is one of those things where people will just be on the internet looking for something interesting to watch, and they'll get, you know, recommended this video via the algorithm, however that works. And I think that's great. I just, you know, at this point in my career, I just want to share, you know, share what I'm doing with folks, and have people see it and be in conversation with people and about making stuff. And because independent filmmaking is so difficult.
Yeah.
It's so hard to do it and raise money to do it. And it's not an easy thing to just make a film in any capacity. And so at this point, you know, I just like people to watch it and to share it, and yeah, just be in conversation with other folks about it and their work. And I think, you know, it's all about finding a community in filmmaking and sharing your work with others. That's kind of why I think that's why you have to, for me at least, I think that's why I have to do it, is because I enjoy being in conversation with other people about it, you know, and sharing. And, you know, it can't be about, like, money or, I don't know, any of those other things, because that's just, it's so hard to manage that. So, you know,
completely different ball game. I understand what you mean. It's very different. But now you finished the film and you've told us what you hope to get from it in terms of enjoyment. I mean, it's been at some festivals, it's for sure, some great festivals even. But how would you do things differently if you was to make this film again as a short, as it were?
It's a really good question. How would I do things differently? I think I would not do anything differently.
Oh, wow. Okay.
The only thing I would do differently is the process of trying to get it out there in film festivals. I'd probably do different things. I learned so much going through the film festival process with this film. I kind of, you know, went for broke with the with the film festivals, and I just learned a lot about you know, what it takes to get into a festival, and so I might do something different in terms of my process for choosing which festivals to apply to and that sort of thing, and not taking it so personally when you don't get in. It's so hard to get into festivals. It's really, sometimes there's no rhyme or reason, it feels, and it doesn't mean anything about your film, really. I mean, you could have a really, really great film and could not get into festivals, and, you know, that's just kind of the nature of the beast, which I've learned. And so I think I took it really personally when I was first going through the process, and I think I have learned now not to do that, and to just go with the flow more.
Yeah, sure. And did you use Film Freeway?
I did, yes. I used Film Freeway for, yeah, I would say 90% of the, you know, submissions. It's great. I mean, it's a great platform.
Yeah.
Makes everything so streamlined and easy for the filmmaker, and yeah, organized. And, but you know, there's a lot on Film Freeway. So it's, you know, you've got to make sure you're doing your research on which ones that, you know, are really worth your time and effort and being a part of. And it's not all about the top tier festivals, you know, obviously those are amazing to get into. Mm. But then there's a lot of other great opportunities for smaller festivals. It just really depends on what you want out of them, I think. And for me, a lot of it was just, you know, meeting other filmmakers and having that opportunity to like, expand my, you know, network of people that, I could work, you know, would love to work with. And, a lot of smaller festivals can offer you that in terms of just, you know, being able to connect with other people who are like-minded people, who you'd sure, like to probably work with one day.
Is there one festival in particular that you really wanted to get into?
That I did not get into?
Yeah.
I mean, I guess, I don't know. I really wanted to get into a lot of the top tier, you know, you kind of put your, you know, hopes on getting into one of those top tier, like Sundance, South By,
yeah,
Tribeca. Those are the big ones, at least in America. And I would have loved to be a part of any of those. And I hope one day I will be with a film.
Sure, you will be.
I've been lucky to go to Sundance as part of like a, I wasn't a part of the filmmaking team, but I, my husband was. We were there for this movie called Landline, which is a wonderful movie that was written and directed by Gillian Robespierre. And Tom was a screenwriter on it as well. Helping create the story for the film. And it was so fun to be there at the festival. It was a wild ride. And I was like, oh, this is so cool. I would love to be here with my own film one day. So I hope that happens.
Yeah. Sorry, this cough. Sorry. Yeah, I think a lot of us would love that. I'm glad you know Tom got to experience it.
It was great. It was great to be like his cheerleader along, and the films, you know, just to be a fly on the wall and be a part of it in a way that was just as a fan, which was great. And so it's a really fun festival. It was a strange year though, because I think the film literally premiered the same night that Donald Trump was inaugurated.
Okay.
And it was just kind of a bizarre feeling of like dread for what was to come. But it was cool to be there.
But the atmosphere was slightly
odd, honestly. Yeah, the atmosphere, yeah. I think it's kind of like it was an odd, you know, feeling that we all kind of had. This feeling of apprehension in the air. Yeah.
Okay, I can understand why that wouldn't have been the experience that many people have wanted. But yeah, right. The main thing, you were there and he was there and his film got celebrated by one of the biggest, best film festivals of all time.
Yeah,
As an actress, so cool. I've noticed you've got 5 showreels and I love that.
Oh,
I mean, that's when I just think workaholic, in the best possible way. You've got a drama reel, a comedy reel, a period look reel, and your Silicon Valley reel, and your acting reel. And I've seen people have 2 or 3, like action, comedy, and drama, or something like that. But you made 5. Do you edit these yourself, or what's
you know, I did edit them myself. I will say I started off making Tom edit them for me. And then eventually I figured
you
didn't out.
Ask him, you made him.
I made him.
Oh,
yeah.
Gosh, I like that.
Yeah. But then I learned how to edit for myself so that I didn't have to bother him anymore when I had new stuff to add. So yes, I did make, I think I made all those reels probably like, early, you know, sometime during the pandemic. I don't know. We had a lot of time at home and I was like, I gotta do something productive because I'm going crazy.
That's very productive. It's very, very productive. So. Well, it is. There's no way around it. In that way, because, for example, I don't know how many period dramas are made or commissioned in America. I mean, they're all over the place in England. That's for sure. Every channel's got about 10. So yeah. If you got an audition for something like that, you've got a reel specially designed of it. But at the same time, would you put that reel with your acting reel? Would you send two at the same time?
I think I have done that before where I've sent, you know, a couple at one time. But I think that's why I kind of made all those different ones, because depending on the project, you know, maybe it is a comedy and they are only going to be interested in, you know, what the lighter stuff is. But yeah, I put, you know, I had so much stuff from Silicon Valley, you know, that I could put a whole little reel together of that, which is, you know, fun to have in addition to like the other comedy stuff that I did. So, you know, every once in a while, yeah, I'll send a couple, but, you know, probably one reel would do, but I'm just being over the top.
No. I completely understand. And are you represented at the moment?
I'm actually in between reps. I have a commercial rep that I work with. Called Ingber and Associates, and they are wonderful. But yeah, I'm actually in the middle of finding a new rep for myself for like the theatrical TV film side. So, okay. You know, putting myself out there, looking around.
Well, you know, I asked because I just wonder what type of conversations you'd have with your agent. If you're put up for something, what does she go for? Or he, sorry, I shouldn't say. Uh-huh. If you're being put up for something, because it's very new to me, this type of thing. Because when I was an actor many years ago, it was always just one reel. But now I'm seeing multiple reels and different reels for different things. And I've also seen clips of you on stage, on your Vimeo channel. So when you have a video of a clip of you on stage as a theatre performer, do you put that alongside a self tape? If you're going to be auditioning for a theater performance, or is it just self-tape?
I think you could definitely include both. I don't know that I have actually. I've probably just done the self-tape. But yeah, I feel like nowadays, you know, it's so easy to put something together online. And I don't know, people just want to see anything they can see. And it's nice to have those kind of options to show folks, you know, oh, whatever thing that they're maybe looking for. But yeah, it's a lot with all the on, you know, on camera stuff. And I feel like attention spans can be short. Yeah. So you want people to watch, and, you know, not make it too long. I think that's always my downfall. I make things maybe too long on my reel. I don't know.
It's always hard to be impartial in that way. Mm-hmm. For me, if I'm editing one of my own films, I hand it over to like an editing friend and they say, why is it? It needs to be half the time it is.
Right.
Get rid of
that's
that
why stuff. Editors are so important and wonderful in the film process, because yes, the editor can see in this, you know, more detached way of like what you actually what you actually need to include in your film. And yeah, I think as directors, we're probably, you know, too precious about things. And that's something you have to learn, I guess, as you go forward, you know, making sure that you can just like let go things that you love because, you know, you don't need them maybe in the film.
You're definitely right there. And finally, you've made this beautiful piece that we've spoken about, and you're working with Tom, your husband mm-hmm. and creative partner also, what is in development for you both now? What could we potentially and hopefully see from you next?
Yeah, well, we are both working on a couple of different feature film scripts, trying to turn Christmas Eve into a feature. And then there's another script that is actually finished, that Tom and I created the story and he wrote the screenplay, and it's set in Kentucky as well, but in 1919 and in Appalachian Kentucky. And I'm really excited about that one. You know, it would require a very large budget, I think. So it's one of those things that you're kind of sharing the script around, and looking for folks that could be interested in the script. And so we're working on that. And I actually have a feature film that I was a producer on, called Every Man for Himself, which is in post-production now, and we're finishing it up and getting ready to submit it to film festivals and go through that whole thing. And
what's that one about? Sorry.
So yeah, that one is about an ex-convict who has to go pick up his old cellmate from prison as he's being released. And he has to drive him around the country wherever he asks him to go because he has to pay a debt from the inside. And so it's really this kind of existential road movie about these two men who have to really deal with their actions that they've done in the past and the ramifications that they that have happened in their lives, and they have to deal with, you know, the things that they've done wrong, and you know, what are they going to do about that? How are they going to make things right? And I was a producer on it, and we filmed it out in the American West, kind of right at the, you know, still the beginning of the pandemic. It was kind of, it was August of 2020, so productions were kind of just coming back on. Line. And we were one of the first SAG-AFTRA approved shoots that was like a traveling production, because we were literally, it's a road movie. So we were in these two trucks driving around Utah, Nevada, Montana, Idaho, and Wyoming. We kind of made this giant circle in the West of America. And it was pretty epic road trip. We, you know, were testing ourselves for COVID three times a week. And I was in charge of, you know, helping, you know, figuring that out and figuring out how we were going to get tested three times a week and doing our tests and overnighting them to a lab in LA where they would upload our results, you know, the next day so that we could stay in compliance with SAG-AFTRA and just, you know that we were staying safe during this crazy time. Of course, it's a lot easier now, I think, to do that for film productions. There's a ton of like, you know, there's a whole industry now of, you know, companies who do that for you. But at the time they were just kind of figuring out that, how to do that. And so, we just kind of found a nurse that had a connection with the lab, and it was very, you know, MacGyvered in terms of just like figuring out how to actually do this so that we could stay in compliance. You know, we were very lucky. None of us, you know, it was a very small shoot. We were literally in two trucks, with our two actors, our director and DP in one truck, which was called the picture truck. And then, you know, I was in the follow truck, and it was, you know, me, a producer, our assistant director, our sound man, and our AC gaffer swing man does it all. You know, and it was the eight of us the entire time, basically. And we switched out at one point with the assistant director and another producer that came on because our assistant director had a conflict for about a week. But yeah, it was an extremely small shoot, and we made a whole feature film with basically like eight people. And
I can't wait to see this one.
I know. I can't wait to see it either. Actually, it's getting really close. You know, we're almost finished with our post, and hopefully it'll be in a film festival at some point soon. And I'm really excited about it. It's a great cast. You may be familiar with him, because he's an Englishman. Okay. His name is Daniel Sharman, and he's an actor that's been in a ton of TV shows and films and stuff. And then this other guy, Nicholas Logan, who has been in some really great films and TV shows as well. There are two main guys, and they're amazing. Right. And then I got to play opposite them as one of the female parts. I play the ex-wife.
All right.
So of the guy that just got out of prison. It was a really fun scene to do. And so that was great, you know, combining the producing aspect and then also getting to act as well again, which is something that's kind of always on my radar. If I can produce and then also get in there as an actor as well is always really great. So
sounds like the best of both worlds, and you get to do producing and acting. Different hats you'd have to wear.
But absolutely
exciting and great ones to have to wear.
And
where do you do posts? You said you're finishing up in post. Is that something you take to a post-production house? Or is it
actually all? We are doing it very we're really small. Because of COVID too, like, you know, a lot of times these post-production houses, you're actually just working with one person directly. So we've just been working with, you know, our post people directly on the film wherever we can, you know, get together safely and stuff. So, we're basically done. Just need to finish our final mix and color and stuff. So.
Excellent.
Yeah. Excellent.
Well done. I really appreciate you coming on, Suzanne. I really do. And I can't wait to see the film. I say it again and keep up all the great work. I love it all. I love it all.
Thank you so much, Damien. Thank you so much for this wonderful conversation. I really appreciate, you know, your questions and thank you.
Anytime. Okay, guys, I need you to like and leave a review of the podcast on iTunes. Anything you can do, share the podcast with friends, will help it grow in more ways than you can possibly imagine. Until next time, thanks again for listening.